Good afternoon and welcome to the ParaPlanner podcast. This week's podcast, or this month's podcast, is all around EIS and VCT. And I'm really pleased today to be joined by Will Clark from Guinness Ventures. And obviously Guinness Ventures do EIS and VCTs. I'll get Will to introduce himself to in a moment. We're also joined by Sean Davies-Cole from PlanWorks and the ParaPlanner Club, Alex Burrows from eParaPlan. And we also have Rhys Edwards as well from Hampshire Hill, our normal ParaPlanner. So as I say, today's podcast all about EIS VCT becoming, I think, more mainstream. I think I wouldn't say necessarily mainstream for all planning, but more and more people are starting to consider EIS and VCTs. So, Will, do you want to introduce yourself to us to start off with? And then I'll start by asking a question, and I'll open that up to the rest of the podders.
Yeah, thanks, Rich. So my name is Will Clark, and I'm from Guinness Ventures. We are a division of Guinness Asset Management, and we're focused on running EIS portfolios, as well as VCT and estate planning services. My role is to manage and hopefully grow our relationships with financial planners, para planners across the UK. And yes, I think I've been working in this space for about 10 years. And one thing I've noticed is a growing awareness of EIS and VCT, which I think is a positive thing. As I'm sure we're going to discuss, they're not appropriate for all investors or all clients, but I think it's certainly an interesting tool within a toolkit that you can use for the right client.
Okay, so I'll ask you first, Will, and then I'll go around the rest of the podders. But why are more advisors and clients considering EIS and VCT? Why are we seeing that increase?
I think awareness is definitely one. So I think more and more advisors are aware of what they can offer. It's quite well known within the EIS and VCT market that a big driver over the last probably 5-10 years of funds towards EIS and VCT portfolios has been changes to pension rules. So reduction over a number of years of lifetime and annual allowances have led advisors and investors to consider other routes to bolster retirement plans. So it's sort of quite well accepted that has been a big driver for investment into VCT and EIS. Interesting year now, so obviously we've had some changes around pensions, so we'll see how that impacts inflows within EIS and VCT. I think in addition to that, they are both investments that can complement more traditional planning and investment. So typically the type of client that would look at an EIS or VCT would be clients that have ticked most other boxes. So they have property assets, they've got pension assets, they've got other listed investments via EIS or taxable portfolios. And they're now looking for something to complement what they've got and also to bring some diversification. So these are investments into small, unquoted growth companies, which aren't always easy to access for a retail investor. So EIS and VCT are a fantastic way of doing that.
Okay. So who would like to sort of pop in and sort of say, again, from the podders, Sean, Rhys or Alex, why are more advisors or clients sort of considering EIS, VCT? Is there anything else that you'd like to add to that?
I think what Will was saying was absolutely spot on. You know, I've seen the changes in pensions absolutely open up this as a new planning field for financial planners and their clients to still build their wealth in something that is really tax efficient, but also it's adding, for the right type of client, which is obviously goes without saying, it's just adding another kind of level of diversification to their portfolio. And these kinds of clients, they've already got, you know, the regular stuff. They've got an ISA and a GIA, and that's invested in a portfolio that meets their risk profile. They might even have, you know, AIM portfolios because they're likely to have estate planning issues. So this is just adding another thing that isn't one of those things to their overall asset mix, which is really useful for these types of clients. But yeah, understanding the type of client that is suitable for this type of thing is probably the most difficult part. And that's where I've seen financial planners most struggle with it.
Rhys, Alex, anything you'd like to add?
No, jumping on the back of what Sean said, I say see it mostly for high net worth clients with a lot of income who have already exhausted the other contributions that they can make, and then like you're saying about IHT possibilities as well with the EIS side of it, the potential for business relief on the on those, obviously not with VCT so much, but that's where we tend to see it on our side certainly.
Yeah, Rhys.
Yeah, I mean, the only other thing I think I would add is that I think it's much easier for financial planners and power planners to get information about VCTs now. A lot more independent reports about VCTs, a lot more people are mentioning them in publications, and I think that directly helps because of the better understanding of the product. I think that's definitely helped with more of them being put into place. But I agree with Sean. I think the thing that has probably got better over the last couple of the last couple of years, it definitely is being able to recognise the right type of client for the product. Not just learning about the product itself, but what does a client that's going to go into a VCT or an EIS or an SEIS look like?
Okay, and we'll perhaps come on to, I suppose, the types of clients that are typically investing in a moment. Just very, very briefly, Will, because I mean, we use the phrase EIS, VCT, but what are the main features and the main differences between them, Will?
So I suppose probably maybe best to start with the what they have in common. So they both invest into small growth UK-based companies. Exciting potential growth stories. The differences are around the way in which they're structured and the way clients hold investments within the space. So an EIS, an investor would hold shares directly in one or a portfolio of these companies. Whereas with a VCT, they're buying shares in the VCT, which is an investment company, a listed investment company. So that's one key difference. The other would be diversification. So with a VCT, you're buying into a portfolio. So the VCT will own holdings in a number of underlying companies that will range and that will vary between providers, but probably say 20 to 70 underlying investee companies within a VCT. So you're getting access to all of those. An EIS portfolio service would be much less than that. So you would have direct shareholding in probably between 6 to 15 companies or something like that. So slightly less diversification. From a tax relief incentive point of view, they're both very attractive, but there are differences. They both have a 30% income tax relief. An EIS enables you to carry back that relief one tax year. An EIS allows investors to defer a capital gain that has been realized on any asset. Key point there, that is only a deferral, so that gain would come back into charge as exits take place. Where VCTs are most well known, and the tax benefit that it has over and above an EIS is tax-free dividends. So that's probably one of the key drivers, and that's driven the popularity of VCT. So lots of similarities, some differences. Liquidity is another one. So they're all dealing in predominantly unquoted companies, although both can actually access some AIM companies. But on the EIS side, there's a lot less liquidity. So these are private companies. Investors need to be aware that they're not redeemable on demand. Capital is only returned when there is an exit of an underlying holding. VCT are listed, but there's not a perfect market for that. But most managers will offer a buyback of shares, but that would be a discounted price. So some differences, some similarities, but they're both often spoken about in the same breath by advisors.
Okay, brilliant. Anything, Sean, that you'd say in terms of a quick differentiator from your perspective, or was Will covered most of the points that you think that should know?
Yeah, I mean, he's covered all the really sort of key technical points, I think. Probably the only difference that I would add to that is And I've seen a bit of a shift in this as well, is whether EIS or VCT is generally favoured. So from a practical perspective, VCT has probably been more of a go-to for the clients that I've tended to work with as a starting point. And this is kind of, it depends on the client, but if they've never invested in this kind of thing before, VCT doesn't feel too different, I don't think, to holding a, you know, a DFM MPS portfolio or that sort of thing, because you're investing into one thing managed by one manager, and then all of the underlying holdings provide the diversification. So you do the investment once, it's in that tax year, it's quite simple as far as this complex kind of solution goes. Whereas EIS for me is just another level to that, requires a whole nother level of kind of administration and complication. That for these types of clients, it's usually fine, but it's just making sure that from a power planner and a financial planner point of view, you understand that that is more involved in the logistical part of things as well. And some clients, I've worked with clients that have favoured going down the EIS route because they're, you know, you look at their portfolio and you talk to them and they already work in the, you know, FX field. That's what their job is. And they understand all of this really complex stuff. They understand what an EIS is because they helped a friend set one up. And, you know, it's those kind of clients that is perfect for that really, really complex stuff. But VCT is kind of an easier way in.
Okay. Alex, Rhys, anything you'd like to add?
The only two differences that I would add that that we've come across is the allowances that you can put into each product annually. You know, we talked about the clients that you're talking to have likely exhausted all their other allowances for the year, but if you've bookmarked more than 200,000 for tax efficient investing in this way. And obviously, you're limited within a VCT for the year. And also, how long you have to hold the investment before you lose your any tax reliefs that you've got. So with the VCT, obviously being longer, that might be a consideration to talk to talk to your clients about. You know, with the EIS not being as long. They're the only two other differences that we tend to discuss.
Yeah. Alex?
No, Rhys has just said exactly the two things I was going to bring up, so beat me to it.
I know in one of our previous podcasts, Sham, Rhys and Alex, you mentioned now that there is some good sources in terms of EIS, VCT comparisons. So I would say to any para planner that is interested in the EIS VCT, you know, certainly look at the Octopus website, look at Guinness Ventures website, look at other people's websites that offer them, because there's a lot of really good information about EIS VCTs. You have case studies on there about which clients they're suitable for, and again, more of the technical information and client facing information, which is well written. But if people wanted to have a comparison tool, where do you go to for your comparison tools for EIS VCTs? So who would like to start me on that one? Alex, you want to start on that? So
yeah, we tend to use MyCap in the first instance. Obviously you have to have the login for us and so on, but I think it does a good job of giving you a lot of information about all of the different EISs, VCTs, SEIS, all of those different sort of types of products. And it allows you to sort of narrow down a bit, and then you can drill down on the different ones that you're looking at and try and find what you or the advisor are trying to focus on from that.
Okay, so MyCap as a comparative source provider. You can't see this on screen, but I can, and Sean and Rhys were nodding quite adamantly to that one. So I think Sean and Rhys probably use MyCap as well.
You know, as Alex suggested, it is on the expensive side. So you, as a business, you have to be doing a lot of this stuff to make it worthwhile, really. And I don't think it's what causes financial planners not to go down this route. But, you know, when you tend to have your eyes open to doing EIS or VCT as a firm and as a financial planner, then you can't tend to shut that door. You're looking for it then, and you do find that, you know, if you're working with one client that can benefit from it and it's suitable for, actually, you will find others quite easily. MyCap is Yeah, as good as they come, I think. I've used other tools in the past because there are some out there, but I think my cap is once you know what you're looking for, it's quite easy to use.
Okay. Reese, anything you want to add to that?
No, I agree. The only thing that, just to kind of carry on from what Alex was saying, we like to use it as a bit of a starting point, and then you can drill down. You mentioned about going on the Octopus website. We do like to go directly to the provider to talk to them. The stuff on the website is great, but if you can actually get somebody in from the firm to talk to you and talk to your team and drill down even further, we like that as well. Because the other thing that with MyCap that we've been told and sort of noticed, if you've got the smaller providers, they don't tend to look quite as favourably on MyCap as some of the larger ones. So if you can use it as a bit of a starting point, you know, and then drill down further, going directly to providers, then yeah, I think that works.
Yeah, well, you were Guinness Ventures were EIS Provider of the Year 2022, I believe. And you're very supportive, aren't you, in terms of what you provide? You know, you're quite keen to talk to advisors and wealth managers, aren't you, in terms of what your offerings are?
Yeah, absolutely. And we are very conscious of the fact, and it was mentioned earlier, that it's a very different type of investing to some more traditional forms of planning. So we very much like the advisors we work with, and by extension, the investors, to fully understand what to expect. So both from a process point of view, and that's a key point, because it is different, especially within EIS. There's an admin burden with an EIS portfolio that's unlike any other type of investing. And I think that's fine, as long as you're aware of what to expect. And also things around liquidity. And one thing we do focus on is we attempt to make sure that investors expect failures within a portfolio. So we are dealing with small, unquoted companies that have great potential, but there will be failures. So, and that shouldn't be a shock. I think we'd much rather everyone goes into that process with their eyes open. So we focus a lot on that. And, you know, that's, I suppose, sort of pre-subscription, but post-subscription, we put a lot of emphasis on our reporting and not just sort of the factual reporting, but we try and bring these companies to life as well. So this is, you know, quite an exciting, interesting form of investing. So we want to showcase that. So our portfolio updates will hopefully bring the companies that the investors have backed to life. So yeah, really, really key for us is to communicate what we're doing.
Reese, Alex and Sian, when you've looked at EIS VCTs, have you been surprised with some of the companies that they invest in? Because some of them are household names, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And that for me, they're the less surprising ones, I think. They're quite interesting. And I suppose it depends, because I do a lot of work with AIM, and then you find, you know, similar, you know, household names that you've heard of, and you go, oh, well, I didn't know that they were on the AIM market rather than the FTSE, and then you kind of understand what the difference is. So, you know, it's really interesting to see the success stories that have come out of EIS and VCT. But probably what's more surprising is you look through the lists of the investee companies that they are investing in or that are, you know, going through EIS funding, and you absolutely haven't heard of any of them, and they all sound really, really fascinating. But yeah, you fully expect not to hear about most of them. You don't know who they are. But I've been to kind of EIS events before where you get the founders standing on a stage telling you kind of what their business is all about, and it's absolutely fascinating. And yeah, it's a real kind of, you understand then what the whole process is about. So, you know, obviously the government provide the tax relief to get people to invest in these younger companies and entrepreneurs. And that's what's going to drive forward bigger companies, takeovers, it's obviously good for the economy. So you can understand then how all of these different pieces fit together.
I mean, it, the incentive is there because they want them to succeed. Not everyone does, but they want them to succeed, and some succeed very, very well. And that's why the government incentivizes it, because they want people to invest in them, and you get the tax relief for the risk that you take. Again, it's that, as you say, that longevity of holding them where the rewards come, later. Don't expect significant returns in the first year is what I would say, although some do. It's that longer holding that makes a difference from my perspective. Rhys, Alex, anything you'd like to add?
No, not on my end. Like Sean says, it's interesting sometimes seeing some of the underlying ones and some of the ones that you haven't heard of. I always like the entertainment ones where you find out what films they've been investing in and things like that. Always find that interesting, being a bit of a film buff. But it is always interesting.
I mean, for me, before they disallowed them, should we say, for me, it was a lot of, I suppose, of the energy companies in my day of EIS VCTs, which they no longer are allowed to utilize now. But, some of those were very exciting at the time. And again, that was when it opened my eyes up, I think, to that EIS VCT as a financial advisor. On average, I mean, I know without giving away, obviously, client details or breaking any confidences, but on average, what sort of size of investments do you see in EIS's VCTs from new clients? And, I know you mentioned that some might make significant contributions, but on average, what would you say it was? And Will, you can then come in if you would in terms of what you experience at Guinness Ventures there. So who'd like to take that one?
I'd say you're normally looking at around about the 100,000 at least. Depends on the situation as well, though, because for people who already have investments like that, they may look to do smaller top-ups on the same thing because they have more knowledge of it and may look to go in again. Yep. And then you get some people who are doing sort of 100 or 200,000 a year, depending on what their income situation is and so on. And I've not seen too many more than that. I say, obviously, you get the odd one or two here and there, but generally speaking, it seems to be around about there.
Okay. Yeah. Sean, Rhys?
Yeah, I've experienced similar. Usually there's, 100,000, 200,000, something like that to play with to do this kind of thing. I've done smaller ones as well, but yeah, they do tend to be kind of clients that have already got them because if that's all you're looking to invest, it's still obviously a lot of money. But when you're looking at these clients who are suitable for this kind of thing, they aren't small portfolios. You are, you're expecting them to have a £1 million pension, maybe £500,000 in like GIA ISAs already. So that's the kind of clients that I would tend to expect to be looking at EIS VCT anyway. And so to amount that kind of money plus fit the criteria of the kind of person that's suitable for this, they're probably still working or have a good income tax bill. So they're going to be young with a lot of that money already in. So going to have good earnings. So there's no reason why they probably wouldn't have 100 200,000 to spare on this kind of thing, but yeah, that's kind of what I've tended to see, and also that usually tends to be a bit of a plan as well. So the most kind of common situation I've seen, I'd say, is a 50 odd year old, 5 years or so to retirement, and on really good bonuses, good income but really good bonuses, and that tends to be where this comes in. And the planning is a bit easier then as well, because it's not kind of saving up capital from spare income. It's I'm going to get this lump sum. I know when I'm going to get it. We can, especially around the VCT market, you know when VCTs are likely to come out, so you can kind of plan for it a bit better.
Okay. Yeah. Rhys?
Same story. Yeah, it's it tends to be around the 150 grand mark. We've done a couple of 5,000s, though. That's, just the... the kind of smaller end. Some of those are, to kind of put a different type of client in there, but some of those are younger people who just want to be in something a little bit more interesting. It's not so much wanting to be in the traditional markets. They want to go into this kind of thing. They like the story, of going in early into these companies that nobody's heard of. But yeah, it generally tends to be around the six-figure mark.
Okay. Will, what's your experience in terms of investments that you have at Guinness?
Yeah, so I think it's interesting to hear that, see the numbers mentioned, sort of 100,000. Obviously, we don't typically only see a proportion of that. So most advisors would split between a number of managers. So and that would vary between advice company advisor how they choose to do that. Just to sort of frame it, obviously VCT would typically have a smaller or lower minimum investment amount versus an EIS service portfolio. So A VCT would typically be something like 3,000 to 6,000 as a minimum, whereas most EIS portfolio services would be something like 20-ish. Our average investment amount into our Guinness EIS, which is our flagship, is more like 50, 55. And what we see is a lot of individuals coming back year on year or tax year on tax year and doing relatively modest amount, so sort of 20 around the minimum. But that average is skewed by those investors who are doing a one-off large investment because of another reason. So yeah, the average is that. And in terms of age, average age is sort of late 50s for EIS, lower for VCT.
Okay, that's intriguing, as the case may be. I'm just going to mention this. This podcast will probably come out just after Consumer Duty launch day. Sorry, I mentioned the Consumer Duty word. Do you think, sort of following Consumer Duty, if EIS VCT fitted a potential client's circumstances and it wasn't considered, do you think that that will make a difference now that you should at least be making clients aware of the opportunities? Because obviously avoiding foreseeable harm, taxation is a foreseeable harm, and tax incentive that you don't discuss, are you then not avoiding foreseeable harm? Sorry to put my compliance hat on, do it every now and again. Anybody want me to, I probably want me to go away, I know, but anybody want to comment on that? So, Sean.
I think that's a fascinating take on it and a really interesting one. I don't think there's a right answer to it because I think there's too many firms and financial planners out there that are shying away from this, this kind of recommendation, this kind of area, rightly or wrongly. But yeah, foreseeable harm, you know, you could say then the foreseeable harm is you invest in an EIS and you lose half the investment. And we shouldn't let tax decide how we are making recommendations. So I'm a bit on the fence with that one. Should we let clients know that they could benefit from something if they really can, if it really suits them? Absolutely. Like they should be, you know, if it's the ideal client for an EIS or VCT, why wouldn't you mention it to them? I think it does come down to that really deep understanding and experience of what does this client look like? Because if you know, then you are, you know, when I was working in this space in a firm where we were doing this quite often, you just have it, give it a once over and you can see that client. Yep, they tick all of those boxes. Risk profile's right. They've got some good amount of earnings, good potential. They're still working for a long while. There's quite a few kind of key indicators and it seems right for them. And often I found with these kind of clients as well, you would mention EIS or VCT with them and they know because their friends have them or that, you know, because they hang out in those kind of circles where they have, you know, they have friends that are similar to them. So yeah, it's not something that's unheard of to these kind of clients either.
Okay. Reese, Alex?
I think personally, I think that you should, as Sean said, I don't think you necessarily have to discuss it with everybody. You've got to find the right type of client. But I do think that with Consumer Duty, we're talking about good outcomes for clients. So whatever the expected outcome was, if they did want to talk to you about tax efficiency and you didn't mention these types of schemes, even if they're not particularly the right client, I think firms should discuss it. And if they don't, I think that perhaps, you know, they... not necessarily reprimanded for it, but I think that that is something that should be talked about, you know, that firms should be doing it. Because for us, if you've got somebody who's got a firm outcome of what they want to achieve, if that fits with what you would expect the objectives of a VCT or an EIS to be, you know, regardless of whether that's your final recommendation or not, I think it should be discussed and discounted if it needs to be. It is interesting, you know, what Consumer Duty is going to do, because as Sean says, if a client's probably not going to care what the outcome they said was if they've lost half of their money. I think it should be discussed if it's relevant, if it's going to give the client the outcome that they have stated that they want, if that's going to be considered, or, you know, if that's what your advice is going to be around, then you should be discussing products that would give them that.
Yeah,
and I think also just to add to that as well, Reese, I think saying that a client's objective is tax efficiency, it's quite an interesting one, because that's probably one of those objectives that we would see as power planners that I would always say, like, our client doesn't say that. And most clients don't say it, but you've probably been in a room where, as well, just like I have, where some clients do say that because they know it. And these are clients that are paying really hefty tax bills. Yeah. They, you know, they see their tax returns. They have to literally make these payments. And you could, you know, I've been in rooms where clients have said these things. So it happens more at that top end.
I want to pay less tax. I want to pay less tax is probably one of those.
I think everybody would say that if you ask them, do you want to pay less tax? No one's going to go, oh, now please, I want to pay more. But I think
it's a different story with, you know, someone that's, you know, a regular person working like us. It's different when you talk to these big clients, you know, the clients that I remember that have been recommended EIS or BCT, you know, they're paying like £500,000 a year sometimes in tax, you know, ridiculous amounts of money of tax, and it really pains them. And they might have had gone through the probate process with parents and things, and they've paid massive IHD bills, so. They feel it. They know what it's about. It's more real to them than, you know, regular people like us just working.
Absolutely.
Alex, you've been very quiet on this. Anything that you want to add, or are you sort of like sitting on the fence?
No, I find it a very interesting question. And I think, like Reece said, it is entirely how you read the client's objectives, what they are saying to you. And like Sean says, you can tell when somebody is genuine about it, and you know when it's advisors who are going to be saying the same thing every time of looking for tax efficiency, and because you see it on just about every single objective of every client. And it's more for the advisors to make that call and then put that down properly in what they're recording on fact finds and so on, I think. That would certainly help power planners to make sure that you're coming up with the right suggestions for it. I think it probably will end up getting suggested a bit more from people like ourselves to advisors, because, you know, have you considered mentioning this to the client? And they'll either say yes or no for whatever reason, but then we're able to record that on the back of it. So.
Well, I deliberately didn't ask you to start that conversation off. There was a reason for that, because obviously you've got your requirements under Consumer Duty, some of which make your products in terms of the markets that you're looking for, make it quite specific of who is most suited to your solutions, your investment solutions, which will obviously help para planners and advisors in ensuring that the relevant clients and the relevant solutions match. Is there anything else around Consumer Duty that you think would be appropriate as a result of guidance or compliance advice that you've received?
I don't think I would add anything in particular. I would just sort of go back to a point I made earlier. I think, you know, a big part of Consumer Duty is client understanding and ensuring that the understanding is throughout the life of the investment. So that's something that I think we can really help with. So obviously the giving of the advice point we can assist with, and we can, you know, give you the details of our services that you may or may not choose. But where we can really make a difference is ensuring that you and the investor are updated with updates that are understandable, and, you know, I think that's really where we can, you know, we can make an impact, I think, on an EIS VCT side. Because, you know, I think for everyone in this conversation, it's vital that not only do investors understand the reason why at the point they have the initial conversation with the advisor, but through the life of the investment, which could be for an EIS, you know, over the medium term. So I think that's quite important.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to sort of draw this to a close in a moment or two. But just for those of you that are listening to the podcast, if you wanted to know a little bit more about EIS and VCTs, whilst we're recording this podcast on the Thursday, LIBF ran a webinar on EIS and VCTs, looking at the technical aspects of it and looking at some of the planning opportunities with some relevant case studies. And you'll be able to find that on the LIBF website under our events page. It should be, by the time this podcast comes live, that event will be live if you missed it, and we actually record all our webinars. So again, if you wanted to learn a little bit more, that might be a starting point. And then obviously Guinness Ventures, look at their website with all the support material that they have available, and likewise look at other solution providers on EIS VCTs. And obviously, if it's an area that you do want to learn more about, then obviously talk to your paraplanning colleagues and your networks, because I'm sure there'll be lots of people that are have the experience of using EIS VCTs and will be able to point you in the right direction and talk you through even the use of MICAP, I would think, to some degree. So anything that anybody wants, so any final comments? So I'm going to go around starting with Alex. Anything final that you'd like to say?
The only thing is that I would mention for any of the paraplanners that are listening for reports is, Reese mentioned earlier on about it being the right ATR. Obviously, if you have clients who are not the right ATR for this, but the product is right for them, then make sure you caveat within your reports the reasons why it is different to their risk profile.
Yeah.
A common catch that we found in other reports. So,
Reese,
the only thing I would add for Paraplan is before you write a report or before you assist an advisor with recommendation for this type of stuff, do your research, increase your knowledge, make sure that you are comfortable with it, because it is something that you can fall flat on your face if you don't quite get it, you know, if you don't quite get it right. Obviously, I'm an in-house paraplanner, so for me, you know, whether the client is correct for it or not should have been already identified by the advisors. But if you can help an advisor with that one way or the other, whether a client is or not relevant for this type of stuff, just make sure that you increase your knowledge and get it from as many sources as you can. You know, as we've said, you can go direct to these providers. You know, BDMs will come out and see. You can go on Zoom calls. There's webinars. So yeah, that would just be my final bit.
Don.
And following on from that, really, we talked a little bit about MICAP earlier, but the research side of it is the most key thing. So most firms have a centralized investment proposition, a proposition that they say, well, you know, we know what platform we're going to use, we know what investment solution we're going to use. EIS and VCT, obviously, firms will not have that, you know, unless you're doing it all the time, it just won't happen. So just what I tend to see is kind of jumping in to go, oh, I'm going to recommend XYZ VCT or XYZ EIS. No, you're going to recommend an EIS. Now we need to research the market. What are we going to do to do that? Because if you're an independent firm, you can't just jump in and go, oh, I like the sound of that. But yeah, well, okay, we now need to make the research back that up. It's much easier to do the research first so that you can see the market and then get that shortlist rather than jump straight to some of the names that we've heard of before. Because the research will make them come out okay if they are as good as marketing says they are and the reason that people have heard them. So yeah, just start with the research and don't jump ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Will, anything you'd like to add?
I'll just say, I think, you know, EIS and VCT offer access to exciting UK-based growth companies with obviously quite powerful suites of tax incentives. And, you know, for the right client, I think they can really form part of an overall portfolio. One thing I mentioned in terms of, you know, I've been speaking in general about EIS and VCT, and it's, I think the point's been made well. It's important to understand, you know, the specific managers and the services that you're reviewing, because there are key differences. So people have different takes on how they want to invest. They might take a generalist approach. They might be sector specific. The point at which they invest might be different. So, so reach out to the companies that you're reviewing. One other source of information, and actually it's under the same umbrella as MICAP, is Intelligent Partnership, which is less of a comparison between managers, but more of a resource for EIS and VCT in general. So case studies and the rules around investing. So they've got some advisor guides to EIS, advisor guides to VCT, which I think are excellent. So I would I'd recommend those.
Okay, excellent. And of course, if you do want to extend your qualifications at LIBF, we do have EIS VCT as part of our level 6 in our TTT and CEO qualification. So that's our taxation trust and tax compliance part. So again, covers it in more detail in that. So it remains for me to say thank you very much to Sean, Reese, Alex and Will, and to all of our listeners on the podcast. I hope you have a wonderful summer. We probably won't be doing any more podcasts during the summer, and we'll be looking at when we come back, maybe the autumn, for when we look to do our next podcast. So for everybody, have a wonderful summer, and thank you very, very much. And I hope you've enjoyed this podcast around EIS and VCT, and I certainly have. So thank you very much, and enjoy the summer.